This episode of Walsh Wednesday is brought to you by MHA of Dutchess County, Foman Wash Car Wash, Juniors 2, the Kyle Robinson Memorial Foundation, the Council on Addiction Prevention and Education of Dutchess County Incorporated, Dayrock, Feldman Kleiman Collins and Sape LLP, Attorneys at Law, and Walsh Valuation.
Let's stay curious, keep an open mind, and as always, I'm glad we get to spend some time. Welcome to Walsh Wednesday.
Hey there, and welcome back to Walsh Wednesday. As always, I'm Connor Walsh, coming to you from the MHA studios here in Poughkeepsie, and we got a great episode for you guys today. It's funny, this is the third program of mine that I've had her on, but this is the first solo interview that I've had with her. With us today, we have Community Outreach Liaison with the Mark Foundation, the head of the Bulger House with MHA, and also a huge proponent of animal-assisted intervention. We're going to get into that a lot today. So many beautiful things. Also, love the shirt, by the way.
Thank you.
Start of
Pride Month.
Yep, start of Pride Month, absolutely. As of when we're recording this, it's the start of Pride Month. We'll be probably like 3/4 through by the time it actually airs. But with us today, we have Brittany Ettinger. Brittany,
Hi.
How are you?
Good, Connor. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for being here. We've talked about this for a while. I remember, we brought up the idea of having you on Walsh Wednesday around the time I had another animal and veterinary expert on.
Yep.
You were commenting on it. It was like, let's get you
episode.
On and
that
do
was,
it.
That was good.
Much appreciated. Yeah, no, I was very grateful for that. But yeah, as I said, this is the third program that I produced that you are on.
Yeah.
First one was Vital Women.
Yep.
Second one was right here for MHA with Your Best You. And now we finally get a one-on-one interview.
Yeah,
it's exciting.
So it's a little bit of each thing out there. It's
all different stories.
I know. It's exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And at least with this and with Your Best You, you're just going to the same place nice and easy.
Yeah, right.
It's all in the same spot.
It works out. Just head over.
Yep.
One-stop shop.
Absolutely. And besides, you get to see everybody you're saying before. Like you always save X amount of time to go bother everybody.
Try and, you know, put in like 10 minutes, maybe 15, stop by and say hi to everybody. You know, I've been with MHA for, you know, a while over 3 years at this point. And even before then, I worked with MHA, you know, in some aspects. I know everybody. And like, you know, because I'm at Bulger, it's our own building.
Yes.
You know, like we're here, it's the, you know, we're at the main office. Or you go to the other one, it's kind of like the whole thing. Like for us, it's just Bulger. And that's my whole building. So like, I don't, you know, other than like my staff, so I don't get to see like everybody else, like most people do in like an office setting where you go into the office and you see like a bunch of different departments. So like, you know, when I get over here, I try and take like, you know, go say hi to everybody, see everyone's doing, touch base, you know, and it's nice. So
it's funny because sure, I am in the building with all these many people, but I'm really just in this hallway, you know?
You get the little like annexes or whatever you want to call them. They kind of like,
And then like when I randomly see somebody who's like, oh my God, how long's it been?
Yeah.
But yeah, no, other than this hallway, everybody else is a crapshoot. But you have so many amazing things going on. And I got to say congratulations on being selected to speak at the MHA National Conference.
Thank you.
We were talking about this ahead of time. You did multiple speeches in and around the area already.
I did. Yeah.
And now you're going to be doing it for the national conference. Have you ever spoken at the national MHA conference before?
So I think I've just wore them down at this point. This is my fourth year applying. So I've applied for the last, since I started with MHA.
Okay.
So this is my fourth year applying. And every year they're like, eh, good try. You know, like, oh, you know, maybe, you know, good luck, apply again next year, right? And that's fine. It's a national conference. Very, very, very competitive. I mean, even the even the local and state conferences I've spoken at, very competitive to like get into. I mean, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people apply to these things. And you know, they're trying to fill 15, 20, maybe 25 spots if it's a big conference. You know, they're, you know, it's very hard to get in. You're competitive. And you know, there's themes of conferences. So if your stuff doesn't really fit their theme, you know, there's a lot of factors that go into it. So I'm no stranger to talking at conferences, and I'm no stranger to talking to the community and things like that. And one of my bucket lists, or, you know, work bucket list things, like career bucket list, I've always said, like, there's some big things I want to do. I want to speak at a national level conference. I want to do a TED talk, you know, things like that. And so I spoke at the three ones across New York State last month, which was phenomenal. I spent like 11 days traveling across New York State, going to three different conferences, speaking at all three. It was really cool. And
that is exciting.
This past Friday, I don't know what, I was like, I'm going to check my email real quick. Like, it's after hours. It's my work email.
Mm.
And I'm like, I don't know. I'm going to like check my email real quick. And I open it and it's like, congratulations, you've been picked for the MHA National Conference. And I'm like, I'm really tired from traveling. Like, no. And I open it up and lo and behold, it's like, congratulations. And I was like, this is my first like national level conference. And I'm like, this is so exciting. It was like 10 o'clock at night. I'm like calling my mom. And like, thankfully she's in South Dakota, so she's several hours behind us.
There you
go.
Okay. Convenient.
I'm calling my best friend and she's like, Gabby. And I'm like, I'm in the national conference. And she's like, parks up, and I'm like, it was just, but I'm like, freaking out, because like, I've worked really, I mean, I've been in this field for a while, so I've wanted to speak at national conference for a long time, you know, being in the field. But you know, even just my years with MHA, that's still, you know, over 3 years, you know, pushing over that, I'm still been trying and to still finally get picked. So like, in the grand scheme of things, I've probably been trying to get to a national level for over 10 years now. Mm. Like, it's finally happening, and I'm like, yes. So I'm presenting on animal assisted interventions, and how we use them in mental health and substance use treatment as a way to build connection and help with things, which is something I use at Bolger and something that the Mark Foundation has helped me with. So it's just like, you know, I kind of like tie all the things together.
Oh, yeah. It's all coming together.
It all works. So it's really, really cool. And people love it. You know, it's very rare that somebody doesn't like an animal of some sort. Mm. And even I've even met people who, you know, they're like, you know, I'm not a dog fan, or I'm not a cat fan, or I don't really like animals. And then lo and behold, I introduce them to like my dog, and they're like, do you mind if I pet her? And I'm like, I got you. Go for it.
I won't tell anybody, but go for it.
Yeah. I'm like, you know, especially even at Bolger, I get a lot, you know, our guys, and we've talked about this on previous stuff.
Yep.
They've lived some harder lives, right?
Yeah.
And with that, many people I know have been attacked by dogs, right?
Yeah.
You know, in some capacity, if you were homeless or, you know, in bad situations, unfortunately, dog bites happen. So the people are afraid, and rightfully so, of it. Me, I'm a dog lover. I've been bitten many of times just doing rescue stuff. But like, for me, I'm just like, you know, I come from it maybe a little bit different of perspective. But
you've also been bitten by the love bug for the pets.
Oh, absolutely. So. Like, I think that overrides, like, it's like my antidote. Like, that was like the antidote to everything.
Yep.
But like, and you know, I have the guys who are just like, you know, I tell all new clients as they're coming into Bolger, just so you know, I utilize a service dog. She's in my office. She's with me. You never have to interact with her. You know, she doesn't like free roam or anything like that. I said, but I just want to let you know, don't be surprised when you get here and you do see I utilize a service dog. You know, and I give them a little bit of info just so they're not shocked. You know, and there's some people who just steer clear of her. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. I have a kennel for her at work, just, you know, for comfort of clients and stuff like that. But for the most part, then people like will see just like, you know, how lovable. And they'll be like, next thing I know, like, now it's like, oh, can I pet her? And I'm like, yeah, it's cool. And then next thing you know, hey, where's Corax today? And I'm like, oh, she's just chilling. And then they're, can I give her a treat? And like, it builds. And I think that's kind of, I never push the animal thing with anybody.
Yeah.
And in all settings and anything, but I use that as this really cool way in sometimes. And then like, you just see it like blossom. And because animals are non-judgmental, you know, there's a different aspect of stuff. Like, for instance, just on a tangent here, I had a client who spoke very little English. Mm. He spoke English. It was very, very broken, but mm-hmm. it was not his comfort. Like, it was not comfortable for him to speak English. He was primarily a Spanish speaker. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when he talked to his family, when he was interacting, for the most part, it was in Spanish. You know, when he interacted, you know, whatever. And he was a very anxious client. Mm. And he just loved my dogs.
Aww.
Because I had my previous shepherd, and then I have my new puppy. Well, she's a very large puppy, but she's a puppy. And somebody who was so shut off and so anxious and felt so out of his own skin and uncomfortable in a setting where he couldn't feel like he could communicate. Mm. Next thing I know, he's having full-blown conversations with my dog in Spanish. My shepherd learned Spanish commands. I cannot make this up. He would call her over. And he would have a full conversation with my dog in Spanish, give her commands in Spanish. Next thing I know, my dog was like trilingual because she was trained in English and German with me.
Wow.
And then she learned Spanish, which obviously, you know, with dogs, it's association. So I taught him the hand commands that he could associate the Spanish with so that she would do what it was to build that. So my dogs are all trained on hand command, but to pair a language to it, and he got to use his language paired with hand commands. So when he told her to do whatever, to talk, to sit, to lay down, whatever it was, he could do the hand command. So I knew she would respond to him, but he could pair Spanish with it, making it more comfortable for him.
Mm.
And then we started using her, even though she was my service dog. I proof my dogs to, even though they're my service dogs, and that's a whole, you know, thing. I do, if my clients want to interact with them and they're comfortable, so I let them. Let them have the therapeutic benefit of it. It's not hurting anybody. I'm in an okay setting where that's okay. And did he blossom? I mean, so open. He worked on his English, so he became really, really proficient, which helped him in the long run with outpatient, with getting a job, with all these other things. And it was just like, it was so cool. And it literally all stemmed from the dog. So it was amazing.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
So, you know,
stuff.
Like, it's just cool stuff like that. So, you know, I get to see, you know, a little bit of everything with that kind of stuff. And it's just so cool. Like, I just love it.
So when was it in your life that you fell into any kind of animal advocacy?
Honestly, my whole life. I know that sounds cheesy. So, okay. Mm-hmm. So I grew up in Colorado. And my dad was a retired New York State trooper. And so when my dad, so I was actually born in New York, but raised in Colorado. That's where I lived my life. But my dad retired from the New York State Troopers. And he moved us out to Colorado because, you know, my dad was done. My dad was a typical young cop. He went 18 years old. He went to the Navy for 4 years. And at 22, he's a trooper and retired by the time he was 40, you know, in his mid 40s. Mm. My mom was a nurse, so she could go anywhere. So they were like, we're going to go to Colorado. So we moved to Colorado. And typical fashion of a lifetime military and police person, if you know any military and police, you'll get this. They can't retire. They can never retire. So we always had animals, always. Like, it was, we always had dogs. I've had dogs and horses my whole life, or cats and all your little critters, you know, things like that. Oh, so I've always had animals. But what really kind of like really went deep was we were living in Colorado. We had been there 6-8 months. And my dad was already getting like the bug. He's like, I don't know if I can do retirement, like my mid 40s. And my mom was a nurse. So my mom was still doing her thing, whatever. And my dad was like, I'm going to apply to the DARE officer job. So there was a local DARE thing. So my dad did that, and he did that for about a year and was like, I love it. I love the kids, but I was in the Navy and I was a trooper for 20 years, like a New York State trooper for 20 plus years, I guess. And he's like, it ain't it.
Yeah.
I need action. And my dad was young, you know, rightly so. So my dad actually became the Mancos Marshal, which is like, we're smaller municipalities out in Colorado, but it would be the equivalent of like the Dutchess County Sheriff. He was the Mancos Marshal. So they're like smaller town and municipalities, but like he was the head of it. So he took that over. And about 3 or 4 months in, my dad was like, I want to start a canine unit. Oh. And my mom and my dad worked on it. And my dad got some crazy grant and to start a canine unit. And we'd always had dogs, so it was no big deal. So my dad went away and we got a canine, military trained and police canine. Came from, she was from Austria, I think, our first one. My dad started a canine unit, which was amazing because methamphetamines and meth labs are huge out west.
Yeah.
And with that comes dog fighting. And with dog fighting comes bait dogs and bait animals. Mm. So my dad was going in and he was doing like meth lab busts mm-hmm. with his canine. Leeson was amazing. This is where my love of shepherds came from. what was that? And my dad would go and he would, you know, do these big busts. And my dad would be like coming home with puppies and like chickens in the back of his car. And he's like,
oh, wow.
I couldn't just leave them. Like the SPCA or like the reservation police or whoever were just going to euthanize them. Mm-hmm. And my dad was like, you know, we love animals. We lived on, I don't even remember how many acres, a lot of acres, which we had a lot of property that was our own, but we backed state land. And in Colorado, if you back state land, you can buy a permit to use the state land.
Oh, okay.
So basically like you pay like $100 a year and you can use the back land to it. So basically we were like, however many acres was our house backed by thousands of acres of state property.
That's solid.
It was cool. As a horse person, you can do a trail ride for fun anywhere.
Yeah.
So my parents were like, all right, like let's rehab them. We've always had animals. And that turned into my parents opened a full-blown animal rescue.
Mm.
And from that, then that became like where I really, really got heavily into it. And I was, you know, at that age, I was starting to get a little bit older. So I knew a little bit more. That's how I got my first horse. That was like, we had horses, but that was like my first baby. She was a bottle baby. But like, that's how we really got into it. So then I kind of grew up around like this big, like animal advocacy. And, you know, my dad would do the police end of it. We would, you know, instead of destroying the animals, as terrible as that's what it's called, but instead of destruction, we would rescue and rehab what we could. And some unfortunately did have to be euthanized because they were, you know, too sick or too whatever, but all the rest we didn't. So we would have litters of puppies. We had alpacas, we had horses, we had chickens, we had pigs, we had a sulcata tortoise once. So we had really? like sulcata tortoise. We had some like frogs, we had some red-eared slider, I mean, anything. Like it was just, but my dad and my mom just had this big heart of like, you know, we can't just let them go. We can't
Noah's
just,
Ark out in Colorado.
And then we would rehab them and find them homes.
Yeah.
And it was cool. And that's how I really got into it. And then, you know, being around police dogs, I really saw like this wild of how smart dogs really are. Like, obviously we love our animals. Like, they're the best. Mm-hmm. And they always are. Everybody's animals are always the best. That's just an end all. But to see like what my dad could do to train these dogs and what they could be trained for. And then my dad became a trainer. So then I used to go to training sessions. I got to be the decoy where you're in the big bite suit and you have like your dog coming running at you and it's just like bites you. And it's cool because it's your own dog that you're at home with all the time.
Yeah.
But like, you know, it's play. You know, people don't realize a lot of police dogs, it's trained, it's play, right? Mm-hmm. They're rewarded. That's their reward. They know that they do X, Y, Z, and they're going to get a reward afterwards. That's why it works.
Yep.
Right. And so because dogs want to do it. So it's cool. You know, and my dad's dogs were so wildly well-trained. We had several different ones over the years, but it was just so cool. And like, I was like, oh, this is really cool. Like, I didn't realize how much you could train, you know, dogs to do. And then I just really started growing up into that. And then over the years, it kind of just like, it develops like more and more and more into like, and then I started learning about like therapy dogs and service dogs. And it was like, oh, this is where this goes. And then just kind of like all little things just kind of like trickled together. And I was like, oh, here's the route I'm going.
Yeah. The dominoes were laid out.
Yeah. It was just all there. Yeah. So that's like, that's the long and short of it.
So when you go out and do these various conferences, speaking on animal assisted intervention, what's kind of like the nuts and bolts of it that you're trying to get across?
So, all right. So animal assisted intervention is like this umbrella term. And under animal assisted interventions can be a kind of like three different categories.
Mm-hmm.
One is going to be where we bracket in like service animals.
Mm-hmm.
So animal, like assistance animals, like guiding eyes, you know, diabetic alert dogs, those kind of stuff. And then we've got therapy dogs and we have emotional support animals. So that's kind of like the individual person based stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get into different types of animal-assisted activities and animal-assisted treatment. And those two are like the really big one that I advocate for, obviously, as a service dog handler and previously having my own not-for-profit that we help veterans get service dogs. But when I go to these conferences, it's really that focus on the animal-assisted activities and the animal-assisted therapy.
Mm.
So the big difference between the two is animal-assisted activities – is I always like to give the example because I feel like people probably know these the most. You ever seen like courthouse dogs where when somebody has to give like a testimony, there's a dog in the to testify.
Yep.
So right, that gives them the calm to assist them, or the dogs that go to libraries and little kids get to read to them because they're impartial and the kids learn to read better because nobody's stopping saying that's not how you say it. No, the kids can just stumble and they correct themselves and they pet the dogs. So that's like kind of like the animal assisted activities, or like puppy yoga. That's technically an animal assisted activity.
Okay.
So it serves a purpose, but there's not a clinical component to it.
Okay.
So it's all kind of more like the intervention type stuff or the support stuff. And then you get into animal assisted therapy, which that's where we attach the clinical aspect to it. So that would be like animal assist, like where we would bring in a therapy dog to do a group session, which I've done at Bulger. I also have brought in a therapy mini horse, which is always a hit.
That's great.
Yeah. So they're certified therapy animals, and therapy animals can come in anything, literally anything. They could be, most common is dogs, obviously, but there's cats, there's pigs, there's rats, guinea pigs, rabbits, really popular.
I actually just spoke to, actually one of the performers we're going to have for the Sound of Nashville concert.
Yeah.
Brooke Morber had a rescue rabbit there.
That's
for
amazing.
A long time.
I love rabbits.
Yeah, Sherlock.
Oh, that's just so cute. I had Anubis and King Booger.
Great
my,
names
my,
as
my
well.
Daughter named the one. He was a rescue.
I love that.
But yeah, so then... So then we have that, and we attach actual clinical intervention to it. So in a group setting, we teach, maybe like for an example, we would do a group on like healthy communication skills.
Mm-hmm.
So my pug, I have a little black pug. She's a senior old lady. She's a certified therapy dog team with me. Totally separate from my service dog. She's my actual therapy dog. And I brought her in. She's so great for this. And this is just a great example to, so we'll set up the group with the guys. Obviously I say the guys cause I'm at Bulger, but I've done it plenty of other places, but for, you know, and I'll bring her in and I'll say, we're going to talk about active, safe and good engaging communication and how that works. Cause you know, you tell people and you can lecture them all day long. It's like in one ear, out the other. And it's like, oh, I've heard this 100 times at outpatient. I've heard it, whatever. So now I bring Pug in, and Pug's a curmudgeon of an old lady, which is just, it's so perfect for it. And I bring her in and I show everybody and I go, Pug, sit. She sits. Pug, lay down. Pug, lays down. Pug, come here. She'll come. And then I go, Pug, sit. And she just looks at you like, you want me to sit? You're talking to me like that? You want me to sit? I'm not sitting. She'll just sit there and stare at you. Same thing. So, and partial, I will be honest, part of that is how I've trained it into her that that's how I want her to respond. But same, she's a pug. So pugs, you know, have a personality, which makes her perfect for it. But so I do that. So then I bring them up and I go to the guys and I said, I want you to try this. I was like, you don't have to yell, but very snippily and very aggressively look at Pug and tell her to sit.
Mm.
And yes, it's a pug named Pug.
I know.
Just,
I love it.
Yes. For anybody who's curious on that, her real name's Khaleesi Saxabella Rose.
Oh, gorgeous.
But I landscaped when I got her and I worked with, you know, a bunch of, you know, redneck, you know, all the guys at the farm.
Yep.
And they're like, we're never going to remember that. That's Pug the Pug. And she's become Pug the Pug.
Lovely.
Yeah. So, you know, but, and I tell the guys, so I'm like, all right. Example, I was like, tell her sit, and they do it, and Pug just looks at him like, me, or she'll walk away from them.
Really?
And then she'll come back and sit by me. And I'm like, all right, call her over nicely. All right, Pug, come. She waddles over. And I'm like, tell her to sit nicely, directly, clear at her. They tell her to sit. She sits. And they're like, oh. And then we start using, I have other commands and other things we do, but that's kind of like the basis of it. And but now we're teaching an active therapeutic intervention in that. And then everybody gets to try it. And believe me, Pug loves it because there's tons of treats involved for her. Nice. So it's great. But it's now they're getting to do it and show how when we want to talk about having nice, direct communication, you can still assert yourself, but you don't need to be aggressive.
Yeah.
Because it's somebody's going to shut down. You just watched my dog shut down and walk away from you because you were kind of like, you know, I'm encouraging them. That's how I want you to talk to her really quickly. And, you know, knowing, like I said, she's perfect temperament for her. She just walks away. And
I was
like,
going to say, that's perfect.
She's like, Mom, I'm just going to have treats until they can do the things I want them to do.
Can you believe it's great. These guys?
Yeah.
Like, honestly.
Amateurs.
Oh, geez.
So it's great. So then we'll play on that. I mean, there's tons of other things they do, but that's usually my starter one.
Yeah.
And it just works. And then people are like, oh. And then I'm like, but see, when you use that and now you use that with humans and people you're talking to, now you're learning and you can see how the skills, how you want to be assertive without being aggressive. You want to be clear and concise in what you're saying before, because if you're like, hey, little Pug, do you think maybe you could sit down real quick for me? She's going to look at you like, what are you talking about? But if you're like, hey, Pug, sit. So we're teaching about clear, concise conversation as well. So like that's usually my starter group for everything because it's easy and you can kind of get through a large group on that. And then there's other things we can build and there's tons of other things, you know, and we do like therapy dogs is like a talking stick. You ever seen that where like people like if you're holding the stick, you get to talk?
Yes.
Or you hold the microphone, you get to talk.
Yep.
Kind of like so in other settings, Pug, we'll use her. If Pug's in front of you, you get to talk. Nobody else gets to talk. We're not interrupting. We're not over talking. And then that gives that person, okay, well, I have the dog sitting, petting. I'm getting to talk. Mm-hmm. And now the next person who wants to talk is respecting that. And it kind of gives this mutual respect then. And then the next person is, okay, I'd like to talk next. And then Pug, they'll call Pug over and Pug will do that. And then we kind of do that. Mm. And then that really starts to teach to have that open communication that you don't need to interrupt people.
Yeah.
You can take the time to process what you want to say. And that also helps with like this slowing down your brain a little bit to say like, do I really need to blurt it out like this? Or do I want to think about and then talk about why I disagree or why I agree or what I see differently and things like that. So we use it in that. So then that's where we get that really nice clinical therapeutic intervention using an animal.
Wow. I think that's great. The way of showing off the way that language is so important. And what you said there, assertive versus aggressive. Mm-hmm. I was just having this conversation the other day about, you know, some people who feel like they need to be defensive or certain things and they're not going to let certain things stand.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
If there's an injustice happening to you or somebody around you, like, I think it's fair to stand up for it.
Yeah.
But how you approach it
makes
such a difference. Assertive versus aggressive. Huge, huge deal.
Huge difference.
I also, this is more funny than it is a direct relation. Do you ever watch Pirates of the Caribbean 3?
Yes.
You probably know where I'm going with this. Calypso, I release you from your human bonds.
Yes.
It's like, no, you have to say it gentler.
Yes.
Calypso. Release you from your human bonds. You know,
it's yeah.
That again, speaking to somebody that you love.
Yeah.
Not treating it as some big grand thing.
It doesn't.
Good or bad.
You know, I mean, think about it. If somebody's coming running down at you and yelling or you're automatically on the defensive because either you don't know what they're talking about or you're like, well, look, what is going on?
You're
going
to freeze.
You're going to like, you know, and you're automatically on the defensive. But if it's like, hey, choose just like a minute, I can just talk to you, like something's bothering, whatever, right? And I understand that like not everybody's at the point and I'm guilty of it. There's plenty of times where I get frustrated about stuff.
Same.
And I'm not, but making the conscious effort to be better, to do better, and to be assertive and concise in what you need to say so you can make a clear message, but in a way that you're going to have a conversation. Like the tone I'm talking to you in now could be the same tone I'd be having an argument with somebody in.
Yeah.
And by argument, I mean more like debate, you know, but like you're going to be a lot more receptive to me talking to you as a human and not yelling at you because talking to somebody and talking at somebody are two totally different things. You know, and I think we all have been there.
Yeah.
You know, so like, and that's just kind of where like there's the basis for that. And like communication is basically the basis of everything, like whether verbal communication, body language, everything is some sort of communication. And even like, you know, if I'm, you know, sitting here like this, like it's going to present like very different. Or, you know, if somebody comes in my office, like at Boulder, you know, if somebody comes in my office and I like, look up, what can I do for you? Like,
That's not a welcoming
kind of vibe. It's not a welcoming thing. And now don't get me wrong. I've been accused many of times of, you know, the resting face. but I'm the kind of person who I have a resting, like kind of the resting bee face, you know?
Mm-hmm. You can curse here. It's
okay.
Fine.
I wasn't sure where we're on that, but like the resting bitch face.
It's Walsh Wednesday. We're okay. Not doing this for MHA okay. Today.
Trying to be censored, but yeah. You know, the resting bitch face. But here's my thing. If I'm talking and engaged, like I emote. I'm a very emotive person. And sometimes I'm behind my desk, but remember, I'm alone in my office. Like, you know, I don't have a shared office. I'm in my office by myself. So like I'm doing stuff. But I tell you so many times, people like, the first time I came up to your office, like, but then they're like, but then when you made eye contact, and really, they were like, you were a totally different person.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's just because like, I'm not going to smile and emote for my computer, you know? So then
what kind of whack?
Hey, you know, how weird would that be if like people walked in?
I think that's even worse.
Right? So like people have learned and I'm like, hey, listen, it's just because, you know, I kind of just like relax. Like I'm trying to relax into what I'm doing and focus on what I'm doing. But if you catch my attention, I'm engaged. Like I will put it, hey, what can I do for you? You know, or hey, what's up? What can I help you with? You know, it's totally different. You know, so that's only sometimes the trip ups. I always tell everybody, like, even if somebody's kind of like that resting face, sometimes you just got to get their attention.
Yeah.
I said, you know, and a lot of people, you don't know what's going on in their day. Maybe they're having a rough day. Maybe they have a certain diagnosis that it's hard for them to emote or interact. And sometimes people just have to like, you know, fix your face. I mean, I get people to tell me, fix your face all the time. And I'm like, oh, yeah, because it's just because I get like, especially like if I'm talking to somebody, I get very invested. And then once I get to give the feedback, it's totally like different. I'm like emoting into it. And I'm, my hands, as you can tell.
Same here.
You know, so stuff like that. But like, it just really gets into communication is so key. And like, there's so many different things. And that's why like, I love doing stuff at Boulder. Yeah. I love Mark Foundation stuff. And I was so grateful on however many months ago we'd been talking about basically the community outreach liaison kind of was like a title that was like made for me.
Oh, really?
You know, I mean, there's always been people who've done that stuff, obviously within the foundations, but I was like, you know, when like we're going out and like we're networking, it's always nicer if we have a title, like somebody has a title, because it just kind of gives a little bit. And they were like, and I was like, what about like community outreach liaison? I was like, it kind of sounds nice. Like, and they're like, cool. And they got me business cards. And I was like, yes.
Ooh, nice.
I love the business card. You know, I already got
the official,
right? It's kind of cool. It's got a little QR code on it. I'm like, here, go to our
same website. Here?
You know, it's cool. But once again, you're communicating to people. And I think that's what it gets down to is just like, you know, and then like, then that leads into the animal assisted interventions and all that stuff. And it's just like, everything is just like so full circle somehow. I'm always just like pulling things together. And like, you know, even in school, like, you know, finishing up my master's and stuff, like, you know, I think I have a little bit of a different perspective from a traditional student, right? There's, you know, you get a big population of the traditional students who are like the people that went like high school to college and you've just been banging out. And then there's always going to be adult students who have like lived experience, life experience. And we always have a different perspective. And it's so cool to hear all different people's perspectives. And then like, you know, you kind of just like get to bring all these things together, you know, and that's when I was like, you know, I see all the podcasts you're doing too. And like, I'm like, it's just so cool. Cause like you do all different things. And like, like it's really awesome to just like be like open to it. And like, you know, I threw this idea at you and you're like, yeah, come down. I was like, yes.
Yeah. No, I was grateful. I was like, yeah, absolutely. Also, I know that you would be a great guest anyway, like just great energy, great vibes. Yeah. And I'm sure everybody out there is feeling it right now. I know that I did the very first time that you stepped into the studio for Vital Women. It was like, I need to work with her.
Thank you.
So it was like, no, that was it. Actually, you were a huge inspiration to me when I was first coming into this building. Because I remember when I just get started, like Andrew and I had been working together for a little while with my company before I came on board here.
Right, yeah.
And then when he starts throwing out the idea of me having some kind of studio or office in here, not even a full MHA employee yet, just an idea of having me close by.
Yeah.
I said, oh, I can work with people like Brittany, for example. Brittany would be a great example of this because she talked about X, Y, Z. And, you know, based on the things that she was thinking of, that makes me think ABC.
Yeah.
And honestly, it was a lot of that very first moment with Vital Women that was a huge inspiration of what I felt I could do here. So I appreciate that
so much. I share your stuff all the time. And I'm like, you know, and you know me, you know, I mean, I talk to you outside of this stuff too. And like, not even just like the podcast stuff, which I think is so cool. I just like if there's not a platform or if there's not information about a thing, don't matter what the thing is, then nobody's going to know.
Yeah.
And I just happen to be a sucker for loving doing this kind of stuff. Like I you know, I did the three conferences just last month. That was just last month. Like I've gone to others, I've done other things. But like, it's my favorite thing to do. Like I love teaching people anything that maybe I would consider myself an expert on. I, even though I know I have a lot to learn on stuff, like I just love it. I love bringing people into the fold. I love sharing about mental health and mental wellness and substance use treatment and animals and community and just like things like that. Like I'm just, it's what I love. It's just, it's not, and you know, it's that cheesy thing. Like, you know, if you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life. Like I honestly feel like that. Like, you know, some days are harder than others. I have a lot of chronic health conditions, that affect me. But like, even on like my worst days, like going into work, I still look forward to it. Like I have a really great team. My team, I love my team. They're a great team. The work I do, I love my work. I love what I do. And to be with such a supportive company. So like, you know, you being willing to come in, you know, to MHA, like, it's just like, it's such a different world because, you know, people don't quit jobs, people quit managers.
Oh.
And I think we all know that.
Yeah, that's, oh, yeah.
Right? And, you know, or, you know, you quit management, right? Whatever. Yep. Nobody quits a job.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure people want to argue semantics at some point with that. But essentially, at the end of the day, most people are not quitting a job because they hate the job. It's because they hate the management.
Yeah.
Or they hate whatever. And I will tell you, I've worked for many of places. Don't get me wrong. There's life changes where things happen. You leave companies, whatever. Yeah. But at the end of the day, I'm talking about like those hard separations. Like, and coming to MHA, when I first started, I had to adapt that it was actually a supportive environment.
Same.
Which was wild.
Yeah.
Because I went to supervision because we're offered, you're, in our field, especially in like, you know, clinical work, we're supposed to have supervision.
Yep.
Active supervision to help you. Not just when you're in trouble or when you did something wrong or when somebody wants to like scold you. You're supposed to have active, good supervision. Somebody you can just pour the ideas out on, to can feed, you know, do the things. Previous employers, it wasn't like that.
Yeah, it felt like the micromanaging. So then when, you know, when they show like, up, yeah. It's like, what did I do?
It's like the bad detective movie where they put you under the light and they're all just like yelling at you and grilling you. And you're like, so when I came to MHA and I remember I'm sitting with my, like one of my, first supervision and I'm like this. And he's just like, we're just here talking about how you're settling in. And I'm like, it's good.
Mm.
And he's like, okay, like anything. And I'm like, no, I'm learning. And he was like, okay. And he's like, see, we have some work to do. I love Mike. He's still my supervision supervisor.
Gotcha.
But now I go into Mike. I got coffee. I'm like, here's your coffee, Mike. Here's mine. I got a lot today. And I'll just sit down. I'm like, so.
I love it. I have a hard time picturing you not being able to speak. So. Right?
Yeah. I mean, but that's how shut down I was at previous places. Yeah. Like the compassion fatigue. I had.
Compassion fatigue. Good phrase.
Yeah. Compassion fatigue is real. I don't think people realize how real it is.
Good phrase. That sums up so much.
Yeah. Because it's not that you don't care anymore. And it's not that you don't love what you do.
Yeah.
It's just your compassion is so fatigued out that you just, everything else, you know, I had gotten to the point in previous jobs where I literally cried my whole way to work.
Yeah.
And would get into the parking lot and I'm like, you know, put it together. And like put on the face and go into work. And as soon as I'm leaving, tears on the way home.
Yeah.
You know, I was losing weight because I wasn't like eating right. Like it was bad. And then like you could go to a whole different thing. And you're like, oh, that's why people have been here for a long time. Like this is a supportive network. And it took months meeting with my supervisor to get to it. And it was so funny. And he was so, but he understood it though. On the flip side of that, he was like, okay, we can work with this. He goes, you know what? Supervision can just be like 10 minutes today. We'll just check in. That's okay. He's like, when you feel more comfortable, we can talk. And the next thing I find myself like emailing, hey, like, do you think we could like talk about this really quick? I got a question. And now it's like I said, now I show up and I'm like, yeah, I will see you Friday morning, 9 a.m. I'll bring coffee. I got a lot this week.
And pause. We're going to take a quick break from our interviews to hear from our sponsors.
Mental Health America of Dutchess County and Reviver Entertainment Group present The Sound of Nashville in the Hudson Valley's Queen City. Featuring headliner, Grand Ole Opry member, and CMT Award nominee, Craig Morgan. With supporting acts, two-time Grammy nominee, Maggie Rose. Finalist of season 19 of The Voice and Hudson Valley native, Ian Flanagan. Viral sensation, Jake Banfield, and special guest, Broadway to country star, Brooke Moriber. The Sound of Nashville, one night only. Tuesday, October 6th at the Bardavon Opera House in Poughkeepsie, New York. Visit bardavon.org for ticket information.
for 60 years, we here at Foam and Wash Car Wash pride ourselves on giving back to the community because we're your neighbors. It's our community too. In celebration of Foam and Wash's 60th anniversary, we want to say thank you. By visiting the link on screen and in the description, you'll receive one free Hot Wax and Shine car wash. No hassles, no gimmicks, just a token of our appreciation.
Foam and Wash Car Wash, home of the Unlimited Wash membership.
Thank you for being part of Foam and Wash Car Wash's story for the last 60 years.
This episode is also sponsored by Juniors 2. Come on out to Juniors 2 in Poughkeepsie, New York for Thursday Night Trivia, hosted by CMJW Entertainment. Play as a team as you work your way through four rounds of trivia categories in order to win gift certificates and other prizes. Juniors 2 Trivia Nights, every Thursday starting at 7 p.m. at 1126 Dutchess Turnpike, Poughkeepsie.
Next, we have a message from our friend Jeff Feldman from Feldman, Kleiman, Collins, and Sape LLP, attorneys at law.
Hi, I'm Jeff Feldman. In 1986, when Paul Kleiman and I started our practice, our goal was to create a law firm where you could meet with an attorney and feel confident that that attorney would be with you every step of the way. Today, the firm has been successfully trying cases at all levels of state and federal courts throughout the Hudson Valley and Capital District. We have been selected as one of the best personal injury and medical malpractice defense law firms by U.S. News and World Report every year since 2009. For all of those years, we were the only firm chosen in any litigation specialty between Albany and White Plains. Your case is important to us. Giving you the time and personal attention you deserve has always been the hallmark of success. Initial consultations are free of charge and always with an attorney.
Thanks for listening, guys. It's time to get back to the show. And play.
I'm glad to see that you were happy to come into MHA because it's so cool. Like, yeah. You get scared, I think, of like C-suite people.
Yes.
And you hear that and like, Andrew's like one of the coolest people.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I just like, he's also like, I mean, yes, he's my boss, you know, by whatever and all that other stuff, but I'm also on the mark board with him.
Yep.
And that has been amazing. And he's been my practicum supervisor for my master's degree.
Oh, shoot. I didn't know that far. That's
yeah.
cool.
So like, you know, I get to see all different sides of Andrew, but like, it's just so wild to be like, yeah, he is C-suite. He's our CEO. Yeah. But like, he actually gives a shit.
Yeah.
Like, he gives a shit about this company and he cares about the things. And like, I know that I can reach out to him and like, it's not like the fear of anything. And like, I just think that kind of an environment makes for better employees.
Yes.
And when you have better employees, your recipients, whether it be in a commercial setting or a client setting, makes it better.
Yeah.
It's always trickle down, you know? So like, nobody's on edge. Everybody just wants to work together. And like, you know, and then that's where I get the freedom to incorporate things like animal assisted interventions yes. and all that kind of other stuff. You know, it's just like all this like full circle.
It's
stuff.
Great. No, I was talking, well, first of all, Megan right across the hall from me, she was applauding me on the feedback that I give at certain times. And I'm very grateful for that. And I said to her, it's a two-way street. I couldn't say stuff like this at some of my other jobs.
Yeah.
But like, this is the environment that I'm walking into. This yeah. hallway that I'm in right now, John, Megan, Noel, Andrew, the mm-hmm. way that we are able to interact, mm-hmm. it's so open.
It
and
is.
I'm blessed for it. So I says, like, I couldn't say the things that I'm saying without you guys being as good as
yeah.
you are. So that makes a big difference. And then like with Andrew, I just showed you the new camera that
yeah.
we got,
oh,
which
amazing,
it's, I'm so excited to get to use it. We just opened it out of the box. It is currently charging right now. Otherwise I'd be using it right now for this episode. but either way, we just did the press conference over at the new Wallace place for the
yes,
groundbreaking.
Yes, that was amazing.
So good. And I was there filming. And I have my little 4K camera and all these other outlets, a couple
yeah.
news outlets, a couple of production companies, whatnot. And each one of them are like, that's small. And I was like, it's not the size, it's how you use it.
Exactly.
But I tell Andrew that mainly as a dick joke more than anything
yeah,
else. And he says to me, he's like, well, what kind of latest and greatest thing might we need and whatnot? And I was like, we can talk about it, look into a variety of different things. And he was very generous about what we're able to do and able to build for this
yeah.
department. And I said to him, I was like, Andrew's like, I'm not used to this. At my last big job before I started my company, I couldn't ask for a PB&J. And here you are like, yeah, what new state-of-the-art camera do you want? Weird.
Yeah.
So
weird. It's just weird when you have the tools you need to do your job.
Right.
And like, and sometimes the answer is no, right? Like sometimes it's absolutely. Like, listen, we can't do it. But the fact that it can be like, but maybe we could do this.
Mm-hmm.
Or, hey, I've heard you. We can't do it now. But thank you for talking about it. You know, but like to even, so like, I understand that everything's the compromise.
Yeah.
Or not everything is always going to be a yes. Or it might just not be a yes right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Realistically, businesses have budgets.
Oh, yeah.
I get it. But it's wild when you have the tools to do your job. Like, it's such a foreign concept because so many times it's just like, you don't even have the right pen to sign a paperwork.
Yep.
You know, and it's just like, how am I supposed to do the bait? Like, or even a decent computer, you know, everything's computer-based. So like, if you have computers that are crashing all the time, like, how are you going to do your job?
Yeah.
You know, so, and I think that just like speaks, you know, volumes. And like, you know, we're at work, the average, I guess, I don't know, maybe this is not statistics, I'm anecdotal, I guess. Most adults, we're at work at least 40 hours a week, right?
Yeah.
Right. That's our schedule.
Yeah.
Plus our commute time.
Mm-hmm.
Some people live a lot farther. Some people live very close, like I do. I could probably ride a bike to work if I didn't have this. But my point being though, but like you're at 40 hours work, plus commute time, that's like a chunk of your life.
Yeah.
And then you're sleeping another, you know, third. So then how much time do you really have? So like work needs to be good.
Yeah.
You know, and like some of us, I think, get lucky to find our passion and something we truly, truly love doing and something we want to make a difference in.
Yeah.
And I think some people search for that for so long and never find it for whatever reasons.
Yeah.
I am very lucky. And I'm not just saying this because we're like podcasting. I've talked to this about many times. Very lucky to have not only been given the opportunity to take over as director of Bolger House, you know, over 3 years ago now at this point, but for all the opportunities I've been given while here.
Yeah.
And the freedom to make Bolger better. Because it wasn't just like, here, you have to run this. It was like, what do you think we could do to be better?
Mm.
And I'm like, well, here's my list. And I really thought the first maybe list, they'd be like, okay. They were like, great, how do we do this? They're like, you're the one who's there. Like, how do we do this?
Mm.
And, you know, some things were little things. Some things were bigger things. Some things were changing staffing patterns. We didn't need to change staff. We just need to change patterns.
Yeah.
But things like that, but like having those freedoms to do that is so cool. And like, for me, like, I'm like, wow, I've been here already over like 3 years. But like, and then, you know, how supportive, like how many companies that you're supposed to be at work 40 hours a week, right? I mean, that's what I am. I work 40 mm-hmm. hours a week.
Yep.
Usually more.
Yeah,
which, same. Whatever, it's fine. I really don't mind. I love it. But, and maybe sometimes that's me being bad about work-life balance.
Yeah, but, that's a whole other discussion. Same here, but yes.
But on the flip side of that, like how many, like when I, okay, so the conferences.
Yes.
Okay. I work 40 hours a week at Bolger. I run Bolger. But how many, I like, these opportunities came up. I was accepted, but I had to like tell my bosses, like, is it okay if I go? Because I'm going to be gone. And like what happened was, so my goal at the beginning of the year, I was like, I want to speak at least 3 conferences by the end of the year. That was my goal. My goal was like by December 31st, I want to have spoken at 3 conferences this year. That was my big goal. I said, oh, this is going to be great. So I started applying to them because like I said, it's very competitive.
Oh yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you know, because these conferences were May. So I was applying to these in January and February. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden I get like emails back to back to back. Hey, congratulations, you've been picked. Congratulations, you've been picked. Congratulations, you've been
picked. They had the same selection committee.
And I was like, this is wild. And then I look at the dates and mm-hmm. it's literally, I don't remember the exact dates off the top of my head right now, but literally one was like the 7th, 8th, 9th. Then the other one was like the 11th, 12th. And the other one was 13th,
14th, 15th.
Oh. Swear.
Yeah.
On everything. So I literally, and I had to, you know, like, so I was like, well, I'm going to have to ask. Like, that's a long time to be. Yes, I'm going to be working mm-hmm. while I'm there. You work these conferences. You know, it's not like, it's not all fun and games.
Yeah.
It's educational. I'm learning stuff to bring back to MHA and to the Mark Foundation and into my community.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sitting through hours and hours and hours continued ed while I'm there. But my point being, like, I had to be like, oh, like, I'm back to backing. And they're like, no, you do this. And I mean, and I think part of it is because I have such an amazing staff. I knew that I could comfortably go away and my staff could handle it.
Yeah.
Like, obviously I was on call. I had my phone, like they reached out to me for stuff, but like, I felt comfortable knowing I could go. And it was so cool because I'm like, oh my God, 3 conferences in 1 month. Like that's my year goal.
Yeah.
So I'd gone, the first one is I went to Albany and that was the New York State Mental Health Counselors Association conference. And then, so from Albany, then I went to Syracuse to the Helio Health Integrated Care Conference. And then from there, I went directly to Niagara Falls for the State Care Management Conference and then home. So literally, it was like Albany, Syracuse, Niagara, and home in like a matter of like whatever it was, week and a half. So it was a lot of traveling.
Big time.
And it was a lot of stuff. I learned so much, though. Like, I think like everything I learned and bringing it back to Boulder, to MHA, to school, to everybody I work with was so beneficial. Like, I learned a lot, but man, getting to speak at three conferences and every conference, this was wild. This was like my dream come true. I never could, and I cannot make this up. Every conference was basically standing room. Like, it was full.
Wow.
Like, it wasn't like I wasn't presenting to like 10 people that maybe decided like, oh, like, yeah, because sometimes you walk by, you go to conferences because, you know, when you go to a conference, there's like five different sessions going at once. You have to pick one to go to. And you walk by ones that it's like there's five people in there.
Yeah.
And that's fine. You know, I've been in those rooms where I'm one of the weird like five people who want to see what this person's talking about. Or sometimes I'll purposely pick that one because I feel bad that there's not a lot of people in there.
Yeah.
But like I get in, I'm getting set up and like I'm getting my computer set up and I turn and it's full.
And just people.
And I'm like, people are pulling chairs in, packed. And I mean, like, they're not small rooms. Like, we're talking, depending on the conference, we were, I mean, I think one of them, there was like 80-something people in there. Another one, we were in probably in 50, 60, some, but like, we were, and even like the one we, it was a, quite a larger room. So like, it wasn't standing room, but like every seat was full.
Mm.
And it was just like, so like, not only did I get to like speak at these conferences, people wanted to hear what I had to say.
People listened.
People listen. I'm sure having the dog helps, you know, a cute
That's
dog.
Not too bad. That's not too bad at all.
But like, I got to share that knowledge and it's something, and it was animal assisted intervention. So in my presentation, depending on the conference, it was anywhere between an hour and a half presentation.
Okay.
I could speak on it. I could make a whole conference on it. And there are whole conferences on it, but I could speak the whole thing. But like, so I kind of like jam packed it down to like, okay, this is like therapy animals. This is service dogs. This is emotional support animals. This is how we use it in treatment. This is how we use it in substance use treatment. This is how we do this. Here's your crash course on everything. Here's some of the laws, the logistics, basic knowledge you need to have. I hope this piques people's interest. And then ended it with like, here's my contact information. Mm-hmm. If you have specific things you want to talk about, I'll happily do that. And that's, I made a lot of connections, including like some policymakers for the state.
Ooh, nice.
Who are trying to get Medicaid to start covering animal assisted interventions.
That's great. And actually that leads me to a question I've been wanting to ask about this. When you're doing these presentations, is the goal to truly, is it just straight education? Is it to advocate for better funding and insurance? Is it kind of a mix of it all? Are there other reasons as well that a layperson such as myself wouldn't even think about being a part of your intentions?
Yeah. So realistically, I say it's the same presentation that I give or the same whatever at each, but it's not.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same bare bones presentation. Yeah. But then depending on where I'm at, depends on where I fine tune the information. Mm-hmm. So like a mental health counselors association, mostly mental health counselors.
Mm-hmm.
They're not psychiatrists. They're not vets. They're not therapy dog teams. They're mental health counselors. So I really focused it on the mental health treatment and that kind of stuff. And then the integrated care conference, that was all different types of care, lawmakers, policymakers, big wigs from this, that, and the other thing. So in that sense, then I was really gearing it towards like, this is why we need funding for this.
Mm.
This is why we need, this is prevention care. Like people don't realize it. You think like you see cute animal and you're like, oh, that's cool. But at the end of the day, there's so much preventative stuff with it that if we can get more care on like this end of it. So, and I advocate for like, let's say to start up a program, like, I don't know, lack of a better term for like every dollar, I don't remember the exact number, but so don't quote me on this. I know it's going to be close, but it's like for every dollar in prevention, we're saving $22 on the back end.
Mm.
So like for every dollar we invest, we're actually saving $22 in the long run. It's some sort of statistic like that. But like, so this type of stuff is preventative care.
Yeah.
Because the more people are engaged in treatment, the more they're doing, the more they feel safe there, the more they want to engage, the more they're absorbing the material, the more they're absorbing everything. So on the back end, that's going to reduce crisis, that's going to reduce health costs, that's going to reduce a lot of stuff. So if we can invest it on this and train whoever on this, then on the back end, we're going to save a lot. And so like there's that aspect of it, you know, and then like talking about like, it doesn't cost as much as people think it does because people are always like, oh, like that's so expensive. Like therapy dog teams that come in and work are volunteers.
Wow.
So like you just need the right trained staff to do it, you know, and those therapy dog teams or therapy animal teams, they're volunteers. And like you know, I always tell everybody, take care of your volunteers.
Yeah.
Like, obviously they're doing it because they want to and giving their time. But I'm like, you know, coffee goes a long way. $10 yeah. gift card goes a long way. Yeah. A thank you card, you know, goes a really long way. So, you know, like just showing people, because people have this idea, oh, well, if it's an animal that costs a lot of money, not really, not in the big, you know, depending on what avenue you go with stuff, but yeah. like, but then you talk about how to incorporate it, but then it just like builds morale. So then like, it, you know, really just depends. And then when we got to care management, the care management conference, those were more talking to, because care managers are really out in the field, right? Like they mostly go to people's houses, they meet people in the community, that kind of stuff. So that conference, I more focused on how to help your participants understand the difference between an emotional support animal and a service dog. For people who think a service dog is like a band-aid that's going to fix everything, understand it's not. Yeah. It's not easy having a service dog. Like people think it's like, oh, it's just easy. This dog's going to fix my life. Yeah. Like it doesn't. It can be hard. You know, it's a big responsibility because like you're now
it's another caring. Life. You're it's taking another care life. Of.
You know, and if that dog gets sick, you're responsible for caring for that dog. If something happens to that dog, you know, so like there's that. So like for the care management, we really focused on the client end of it, like who really qualifies for a service dog? What really qualifies as a service dog? What does it take to be a service dog? You know, we have clients or, you know, care managers who we hear like people are getting kicked out of places because of a dog, right? And, you know, or they can't find housing because, and then find out sometimes, oh, that animal's an emotional support animal.
Yeah.
You know, but here's how you get the right legal proper documentation, not the gimmick scam pay $9.95 paperwork, the real paperwork, who really yeah. qualifies. Because when we help our clients in the true and accurate and legal and proper way, we're doing them a good service. And then that sets them up way better than being like, oh, maybe this is how we do it. Yeah. You know, so like, so, you know, it's the same bones of everything, but I really tweak it to where, so like for nationals, that's going to be a lot of different type of people there because that's just MHA. So like, yeah. you know, that's a lot of different. So that's going to probably more focus on like the general outline of this is how you can incorporate, this is how you could start it. Here's the differences. These are ways that we can save money. This is how you can invest to save money in the long run. This is, you know, how it works. So that'll be like a more blanket type thing. So it really just depends. But like, I've also gone to like county, like Office of Mental Health, Department of Health, like meetings like that. And like in a small room, of like 20 or so county executives or county people, that's geared very differently, you know? So it's still the same bare bones information, but it's like, okay, this is why it's important for your county to know this. This is how you're going to protect your county buildings. This is what you can and can't do. This is where the money can and can't go. You know, things like that. So it does. It's really audience based is how I tweak that. But there's so many things like you can go over on that.
Yeah. You got to know your audience. That's one of the biggest things about it. As somebody who has performed on stage as an actor, as a musician, as a speaker. Yeah. You have to adapt to your audience because, you know, it's kind of like whatever kind of energy they're giving you, you got to give the energy back. You have to know what they're there to hear. Without a doubt, I'm going to pick on something that you said before, how so much of it is on prevention.
Yeah.
And that is huge. Andrew said to me one time recently that really put a lot of what we do here at MHA into perspective is how at the end of the day, you boil everything down. The two words that keep coming up are care and prevention.
Yep.
Because the care that we give will hopefully prevent any kind of crisis, any kind of issue that will come down to it. And I was like, that's a really solid way of explaining it and, you know, whittling it down. Because even still, there are so many people who know the MHA name but don't fully understand all the in and outs that go on without this organization, this industry, everything. Yeah. And I'm still very much learning myself. It's really incredible what goes on in this building, what you do for your talks, all of it, getting the education and getting the awareness out. So again, so when it comes to the MHA National Conference, when is that exactly this year?
October 8th and 9th.
October
8th and 9th. And it's in Washington, D.C.
Very cool. Very, very cool.
I've been to the national conference. I've gone to it. It's amazing. So getting to be on the other side this year is going to be going to be cool. But yeah, like you said, like people, but, and then this, I think that's the other thing people hear is mental health, right? Mental Health America.
Yeah.
Or they just hear the letters. Yeah. I don't think they realize how much other things are like under that.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's where, and you know, it's right. It's this prevention stuff because what costs a lot of money is when that big crisis, the big exploding moment, happens. You know, whatever that may be, is it housing? Is it substance use? Is it mental health? Is it whatever it may be? It's when you get to that, that's what costs. Not that everything else doesn't cost money, because everything costs money, but that's a lot more expensive than prevention.
Oh yeah. Sometimes it's easier to maintain, even though it may feel hard to maintain something, as long as you hold up with the maintenance of it, it's going to be a heck of a lot easier than the overall destruction or rebuilding.
Yeah, it's true. And like, and that's where like Mark Foundation stuff comes in, right? So years ago, Mark Foundation was something very different than what it is now. So Mark Foundation used to run the residentials. So you see like Mark Bolger House, Mark Floor, whatever. And then MHA took them over. And Mark Foundation kind of got to turn into like this like philanthropy, community support awareness program. And that was so cool because then like, you know, MHA got to take over like the business part of it. And then the Mark Foundation got to be what it is today, which is why I love it. That's why I love being on the board. Like, we're a board that gets stuff done. Like, I've seen boards where it's just stuffy and you just sit there and you're like, yeah, no one's listening to me. Or like, yeah, nothing's going to happen. Like, we do stuff. Like, we've got, you know, this weekend we actually have our Day for Hope event. And it's just to raise awareness about, you know, substance use and the residential settings and bringing hope to our community. And it's so cool. And it's, you know, and it's like, you know, obviously this will be out after that, but you know, it's such a great, event to just bring the community together in like a nice enjoy food, like at Germania way. And there's music and there's, we're gonna have a canine demo and like all this other stuff, but it's a community event that raises awareness. And it's for the whole family. We gear all of our stuff like these for the whole family. So you can bring your littles or you could just come like as an adult or like have a nice afternoon out. And it's so cool. And then like, you know, we have like our upcoming annual golf outing. And then we have our day overdose awareness Memorial Day. And then we're going to have our, we're doing a fundraiser. We used to do luncheons for like our fundraiser luncheon annual meeting type thing. We're doing a dinner this year. You know, and they're all fundraisers to raise money for addiction recovery in the Mid-Hudson region. So like the whole Mid-Hudson. So we have like all these really cool events coming up. And we partner with MHA a ton, you know, like we work, you know, hand in hand. But like, you know, the Mark Foundation gets to be kind of like, we kind of get to do more some of like the fun stuff, you know, that was like, the Mark Foundation is how I got the gyms for the houses. I got, I proposed this idea a while ago and the board was so loving. And I said, listen, I said like physical health is like so important. Gym memberships are expensive, right? Even Planet Fitness was still $20 a month. And when, you know, you're in treatment and maybe you're not working yet, that's a lot of money, you know?
And then the transportation, and if then you don't have a car.
If it's not right there, you know, and like even the closest ones are a little too far to walk for that. Like that's going to be your work it if you walk to. And I said, what about if like we put gyms in the houses? Like we all had gyms, but they were like questionable equipment. Like it was functional, but it wasn't, you know, it was like two dumbbells and like a bench. And it was like, oh, maybe you can work out that. And they said, do it. And I said, what are we thinking? And they said, put it together. Let us know. And I came up with this idea and I worked with Rogue Fitness and built a brand new industrial quality Rogue Fitness multi-purpose gym. And we've got a full rack so you can deadlift, bench press, squat off of it. We've got a rolling bench. I've got kettlebells. I've got dumbbells. I've got bikes. I've got all these things. Full gym. Like if I could put my own personal gym in my house, like this is my dream gym. It's beautiful. And we got one at Bolger and then I got to do the one at Florence as well. They're big, but they were not cheap. I was very thankful for the Mark Foundation. They were like, where do you sign the check? You know, and I put the invoices together, presented it to them, gave them all the information and they just, they did it. We got to install them, but like we got to do things, but prevention, physical health, that's prevention care, you know? And like now we have a gym and it's easy access. It's literally downstairs and you can just walk to it. It doesn't cost anything. It's there. It's free use. It's quality, safe, good, effective equipment. You know, so things like that. And they, through the Mark Foundation, there's transitional funds, you know, for when people are graduating as a, out of residentials. They're given money to help them on their next steps of their journey, which is really great. You know, so that's why we do these fundraisers so that we can afford to pay for those things, you know, like the grants, scholarships, whatever, you know, you want to call them. You know, that's $1,000 to $1,500 per person that graduates out of residentials. And it's not just the MHA residentials. It's the other residentials in the area as well, the other programs. You know, so we're able to get, that could be a month rent. for somebody, easily. Or that could be the deposit for something, or that could be your groceries, or that could be your a month's bus pass and whatever else you need. But like, it helps them get on their way. Yeah. And it's so useful, you know, so like we do these big events so that we can do that stuff, a prevention. We're helping them prevent a lot of other stuff. Yep. And we do it, and you know, it gives them a sense of pride. So like, it's so just cool to like see all the things work together. And like, that's why we have the big fundraisers, the big events to do that stuff. And through the Mark Foundation, we also support other events like the Single Purpose Sober Club. Like, we do stuff for them all the time. You know, they'll request like, hey, you know, they were having like a walk, you know, fundraiser walk or whatever. Mm-hmm. We bought sponsorship from them, you know, so we're supporting other causes like that in the community as well. So like, it's really cool to be on a board that we do things. We actually do things. Yeah. And it's just like, you actually get to see on the back end, like what's happening, like who we helped. Not just like, oh yeah, it's our board meeting. What are we doing? We're sitting on money and not doing anything with it. Like, you know, so it's really cool because it's just, it benefits the community. And, you know, they're also the people that support me in all the things that I do. So I can do the things to, because, you know, and I know I say it's like, you know, because I'm at MHA and I'm at the Mark Foundation, but at the end of the day, it's like my community. Like, that's what I care about. I really do. And even though like I wasn't raised here, and this is my community now. This is where I live. This is where I work. This is where
I found family.
It's my found family. It's everything here now. So like, my community is so important. And I just happen to have like this great outlet with work and the Mark Foundation and just like all these people I meet, and me coming here and just getting to ramble with you is fun because it's just like, I think, you know, I hope that it just like, I just hope it inspires somebody else to like, even if it's really hard to find what you love or like pursue what you love, like just give 1% of your energy to something you love. And if you do that every day, then maybe you'll kind of get that momentum. And you know, you can start building on that, because it's just going to take prevention. If you do something you love every day, even if it's something so little, go sit out in the sun, have lizard time. I don't know if you know what lizard time is.
explain it for them for a moment.
So lizard time, when it's really nice outside, like a lizard, you just go out and you just sun yourself. Not a thought in your brain. No book, no nothing. You just go outside and just absorb some nice sunshine and fresh air and just have some lizard time.
Yep.
Sometimes, you know, bring in the book afterwards, but sometimes just movement, you know, but like, just try and find something you love in your day. I know it's cheesy, but find something to be grateful for. And if, you know, yesterday getting out of bed was really hard and took you 20 minutes and today it only took you 19 minutes to get yourself up and out of bed, it's better.
That's progress.
You know, so you find something you're grateful for, you find progress, you know, or if yesterday you woke up with a really bad headache and you just couldn't get going and today you were able to, that's great. You know, so I always tell everybody, like, find something you're grateful for, find something that makes you happy, find something, you know, and that's just like the prevention piece, you know, and then it just makes everything else better. Mm. Like, you know, I just love it. Like, I think that's why I just like chatting with people, because I'm just like, Maybe me just chatting will like spark something.
Yeah.
And somebody will be like, or if somebody wants to be like, I don't want to hear her talk anymore. So maybe if I talk, it'll stop her from talking. But that's great, because then get other people involved.
Yeah, that's fun. And as I said a moment ago, like that very first interview that we had with the Vital Women, I wasn't even conducting that interview, but it still inspired me to present a lot of things, and you were a big inspiration on that. So see, that's there you go. That's one little,
it's full circle.
One little bit.
I never would have thought you would, you know, and then I was like, oh, and then when I saw you, I was like, oh, it's the same Connor. I was like, that's so cool.
Who would have thought?
I know.
Trust me, I would not have thought at the time.
It was meant to be.
It was meant to be.
Yeah.
But as we're kind of wrapping up this episode now, and you've really touched upon a lot of the elements of this question already, but something that has been a common topic recently, I feel, across the different shows that I'm producing, is that there is a complacency crisis. There is a big complacency crisis where people, you know, we have these devices in front of us, and it makes life so much easier, to the point it's like, it makes it, unfortunately, makes a lot of people weak, and they'll come back and incompetent. Billy Joel said, it's like, in a world full of incompetence, being competence looks extraordinary.
Yeah.
And we're talking about the competency here at MHA, we're talking about the competency here with the Mark Foundation, we're talking about your competency. It just comes down to action.
Yeah.
What is the kind of call to action that you want to leave the Walsh Wednesday listening audience with?
So talking about devices, I think it's so easy for people to be keyboard warriors,
right?
Or like the, I'll do it tomorrow.
Yeah.
But the reality is, tomorrow never comes, right? So my thing, and this is, I tell the guys at Bulger this all the time, all you need to be, I'm not asking you to change the world. I'm not asking for you to make a giant leap. I'm not even asking for you to change your entire routine. Just be 1% better today than you were yesterday. And that compounds, like interest on a bank account. You get compounding stuff. So if you're 1% better today than you were yesterday, and you just keep doing that, it's not a lot. It's just something little, and it can be 1% anything. 1% more competent in your work, 1% more competent in how you communicate with people, 1% more active in a meeting, 1% more anything, just whatever. Find something in your day, be 1% better at it. It doesn't matter what it is, but if you get, it's like it compounds. And sooner or later, that just becomes the habit and you become better and better, and it sparks ideas and it gets your brain working, it gets you moving, and it gets you finding something you like. So it's just really that 1% rule. Just find 1%. And it's not 1% of all these, just 1% of something, because then you're still better than you were yesterday. And I think at the end of the day, if everybody just tries to do that, I think everybody will just be better people. Like, be 1% nicer.
Yeah.
You know, take 1% more time with somebody. Give 1% more energy to something. Like, it doesn't have to be these big things. And I think at the end of the day, just that 1% thing just would, if everybody did it in not too long from now, it would just make things so much better. People would be nicer. People would be more compassionate. People would be more understanding. People would be better at what they do. And then, like, that helps somebody else who helps somebody else, and like, who does all these things. And like, it could be anything. Like, your accountant could become 1% better. Now your taxes are going to look better, you know, or like your therapist is 1% more engaged. That made you feel better. Your friend is 1% more invested in that conversation. Your job, you know, you did 1% better. Now you're seeing the fruit. Like, anything, anywhere, it's just going to be better. And if just everybody does that, it's just like, not to be cheesy, it just makes every like smiley, you know, like even just smiling. If you smiled once today at somebody, you didn't do that yesterday, there's your 1%.
Yeah.
You know, so like, it's, I think it's just that big 1% thing,
yeah.
You know, and find something and it will get better and everybody will be just better humans. Like, that's all I want. I just want to see a world, and this is so cheesy, I just want to see a world of good, happy humans.
Yeah.
And I know it's a far reach and it's going to take a very long time. It's nothing I'm probably going to see in my lifetime, but I do. You know, my cheesy loviness, I just hope people are just good people.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't like something, then just keep going. If you like something, invest into it. But, you know, just be 1% better. That's all.
Yeah.
You don't need to be 1% worse. Just 1% better in something. And if that 1% is holding your tongue on something too, that's sometimes a good one.
That's
sometimes
a good
one, learning too. To not say certain things and just move along is also, I think, really beneficial, because sometimes you can, that can be very hurtful. That can be very detrimental. So if you just, that 1% is just letting it go, that's not a bad thing.
Well, I always like to think is like, technically, you only have 1% difference between a failing grade and a passing grade too.
Absolutely
so
true.
When you look at it like that.
Good point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like that 1%, it'll add up. It'll
really
make
does.
A difference.
It really does.
Brittany, this has been
cool.
Phenomenal. Thank you
Thanks.
So much for being here.
Yeah.
Since you're going to, you just were on the road with your conferences. You have the big MHA yeah. one in October.
Yep.
You're probably going to get slammed and people are going to be inviting you to stuff. But before it gets that crazy, how can people reach out to you for speaking engagements?
Probably my work cell would be probably the best. And that's 845-464-2755, call or text. Speaking stuff, questions about animal assisted interventions, questions about Mark Foundation, about Bolger House, about if you just need help with resources, like I'm even happy to do that. Like, it can really be about anything. My email, which is bettinger@mhaduchess.org. Probably the best and easiest way to reach out to me is either of those. And I'm literally happy to talk about anything to help people, even if it's just like, hey, I need a number four, or hey, can you recommend, but like, call me. I'm there for it. So I love it.
You better be careful, Brittany. You might be doing speaking engagements full time.
Oh, we wouldn't mind. It'd be okay.
Lovely.
So.
And again, we'll make sure that we have information in the description of this episode so you can find Brittany, you can enjoy these talks. And, you know, once we have more information come when the MHA, when the whole big national conference happens, if we can get footage, if we can do whatever, we will definitely plug it. And also, who knows what stage you'll see her on next. Wouldn't that be cool to see you on the TED Talk real soon, too?
One day.
That'd be awesome.
That's the goal.
Fantastic.
Cool.
I'm Connor.
I'm Brittany.
And as always, we're glad we get to
spend some time.
And that's a wrap on this week's episode. Much love to our sponsors this week, MHA of Dutchess County, Foman Wash Car Wash, Juniors 2, the Kyle Robinson Memorial Foundation, Council on Addiction Prevention and Education of Dutchess County Incorporated, Dayrock, Feldman, Kleiman, Collins & Safe, LLP, Attorneys at Law, and Walsh Valuation. Last but not least, thank you to our Walsh Wednesday All-Stars, those who have generously contributed to the 2026 Walsh Wednesday Fund Drive. It's through your support that Walsh Wednesday can continue to bring quality programming. If you'd like to donate or learn more about becoming a sponsor, please email connor@cmjwentertainment.com. Thank you once again, and for Walsh Wednesday, I'm Connor, and I'm glad we get to spend some time.